Hello. The seatbelt check is around the corner.
You actually were telling the truth.
I do that quite a lot. Your people are always surprised.
Welcome aboard. Ladies and gentlemen, there may be some turbulence up ahead. Make sure your seatbelts are fastened.
To those guests who've just joined us, welcome.
Hey guys, welcome back to Escape to the Magic Podcast. We are your hosts. My name is Ryan.
And I am Dak.
And on this week's episode, we are talking about the top 10 Disney World attractions based on wait times. That is a mouthful of a title.
Yes, it is.
But you know what? You sent this topic to me last week? It's been a few days. But man, it got me excited because I think this is a very interesting topic to dissect when you're looking at attractions and factoring in the wait times.
Yeah, it's kind of a two-pronged approach, right? It's the attraction itself, how much do I like it, versus how long am I going to have to typically wait to get on this attraction? And so we're going to basically decide, is it worth it, and rank them according to that wait time.
Yeah, because if you look at straight up just ranking the top 10 attractions at Disney World, it's going to be a different list
for
than
sure.
What we're just about to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Hey, before we get into that, we received a review on Apple Podcast. If we got a minute, I'd like to go ahead and go through that with you.
We've got about 45 minutes.
So okay. So this one is from Disney Explorer. I'm not sure if that's supposed to be Disney Explorer or Disney Explorer, period. But Disney Explorer says, this podcast has it all. To all the adventures they've had at the parks, to rating different rides, rating parks, and so much more. It's fun to listen to these guys with such excitement and energy. I would definitely recommend this podcast to you if you're searching for something to listen to on a daily basis.
Hey, that's a legit review.
Hey, I like it. And it's great for today's topic because here we are again about to rank and rate something based on our opinion of it.
So, yeah. So whomever you are, Disney, was it Disney Explorer?
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. Hey, you know what? We appreciate it. We actually invite anybody who's listening to give us a review. Go on Apple Podcast, submit a review. If it's give us a 5-star. Like if you're listening right now, you've made it this far into the podcast, give us a 5-star review. And you can also go, this is actually a new feature on Spotify. You can actually leave a comment on like individual episodes.
Nice.
Which is, this is kind of a new feature that Spotify has rolled out. So we appreciate it. It helps the podcast grow. This is a fan supported podcast. We make $0. We've talked about that.
That's
right. We do this out of the love of our own hearts for Disney. So, but yeah, we love hearing those reviews and keep them coming. So
absolutely.
Well, let's get into this, man. This is a fun topic.
Yeah, absolutely. So I did some research. I wanted to basically explore several different websites. So there's several different Disney websites out there that are all just data gatherer guys, right? So they just are constantly gathering data. All kinds of data. It was actually interesting as I started to get into it. Some of these websites were even telling you average daily temperatures, average cost of, lightning lane per day, and just getting into as much data as you could possibly digest when it came to Disney World and the attractions. But what I was mostly focused on is the longest by average. So this is taking the whole year into account, right? So your high times, your low times, Christmas, everything from Christmas to some random day in February where the crowd levels might be at a 2 or 3, right? Mm-hmm. And so what I wanted to do is just kind of let's just rank them according to how long you're going to wait by time, right? Most of this information should be fairly accurate. Again, you're taking a very wide swath of information, right? 365 days a year for Disney and talking about what their wait times are on average. So just to play a little game here as we're going through this, what attraction would you say has the longest wait time for 2024 so far?
So we're talking just at Disney World. all four parks.
Yeah, all four parks at Disney World.
So, you know, that's interesting because I would say Tron, but Tron just turned to standby recently. Are we count? Is that
it's on the list? It did make the list, it is not number one.
I'm going to say Flight of Passage.
You are correct. Okay. Yeah,
from personal experience, I'm going to say Flight of Passage.
Yeah, so Flight of Passage came in right at an average wait time of 89 minutes. Now this is standby, That's want to be clear on that. We'll get into Lightning Lane and what that does for you a little bit later in our discussion, but I'll just kind of run down the list. So, Flight of Passage, 89 minutes. Rise of the Resistance, 79 minutes. Slinky Dog comes in at number 3, 74 minutes on average. Then after that, you got Seven Dwarfs Mine Train at 73 minutes. Test Track at 56, tied with Remy's and Frozen Ever After. So all three of those. That's interesting, right? Because those are all three Epcot rides. So Test Track, Remy's, Frozen Ever After all came in averaging about 56 minutes. Then you got Peter Pan's Flight at 55 minutes. Tron at 54, tied also with Rockin' Roller Coaster at 54 minutes. So those are your top 10. I won't bore you with all 20, but I went all the way down to top 20 attractions. Our thought process was, okay, in your mind, is an 89-minute wait time, so an hour and a half essentially, worth the Flight of Passage experience and all that it brings to you, right? Like, sorry, I'm having a hard time getting that out, but that's basically what we're trying to decide is, like, if you were to put these in order of rides you enjoy the most, which one is worth the wait to you the most?
Gotcha. Like, no, yeah, I love this. I love this.
Absolutely, I'm willing to wait, you know, 55 minutes for Tron if that's your number one.
Okay. I like it.
So let's kind of break through these. What I thought was a little bit interesting in this is the Lightning Lane differential. If you had to guess, what would you guess the average wait time is for a person using Lightning Lane for Flight of Passage?
Ooh, 20 minutes.
Close. 17 minutes is what the average is for Flight of Passage.
You're basically shaving off about an hour.
Yes.
Using the Lightning Lane.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, on average, you're shaving about 72 minutes. So let me just kind of run through these. So just going from the top down again. So Rise, 15 minutes average wait time. Slinky Dog, average 15 minutes. Seven Dwarfs, 15 minutes. Test Track, 22 minutes. Lightning Lane. Remy's, 15. Frozen Ever After, also 15. Peter Pan Flight, on average, 15. Tron, 16 minutes, which I thought was amazing. And then Rock and Roller Coaster, 16 minutes on average for Lightning Lane.
Okay.
You know, obviously Tron just flipped over, but what I saw was incredible to me, the amount of time saved by doing Lightning Lane and paying that, whatever it is, $30 now per day, per person, to use the Lightning Lane versus some of these wait times. On average, you're gonna save anywhere from 30 to minutes to an hour of time.
So I think what we're proving right now is for people who wonder and question, is the Lightning Lane purchase worth it? If you're looking to save time, 100% it's worth it.
Yeah,
fork over the $30 every day for that opportunity.
Yeah, I've gotten to the point where I just build that into the price. My daily ticket price is $110, I'm just going to go right ahead and figure another $30 on top of that, because there's no way that I'm going to not get Lightning Lane or Genie Plus or Fast Pass or whatever they want to call it this week, right? Like, whatever that option is, I'm going to get it every single time, because just seeing these numbers and the average wait times standby versus Lightning Lane, it's not even a comparison. I mean, it's me versus, you know, The Rock in an arm wrestling contest. It's just not going to happen.
Give yourself more credit, Eck. You do have big biceps. You get swollen in the mornings.
Yeah. Let's get into this. So here's our attractions again. Flight of Passage, Rise, Slinky Dog, Seven Dwarfs, Test Track, Remy's, Frozen, Peter Pan, Tron, Rock and Roller Coaster.
Okay.
So of those, how would you rate those just off the bat? What would be your number one ride out of all of those that we've talked about?
Okay. I need you to, okay, one more time.
A little slower.
Yeah.
Flight of Passage, Rise of the Resistance.
So I'm just, so you're asking me to rank them just without the times? Or
without
just
the times. Okay. So that we can kind of now start to come to some sort of
I'm surprised there's no Tower of Terror on this.
Tower of Terror came in at number 12.
Really?
Its average standby wait time was 51 minutes, and then the Lightning Lane was only 15 minutes.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. All right. One more time. Yeah.
So Flight of Passage, that's the longest wait. Rise, Slinky Dog, Seven Dwarves, Test Track, Remy's, Frozen, Peter Pan, Tron, Rock and Roller Coaster.
Okay, so if I'm ranking these just based off of pure like, not factoring in wait times, correct?
Correct.
It's probably a tie between Tron and Flight of Passage.
I would agree.
Yeah.
I would agree. That would be my first tier or my highest tier.
Depending on the mood I'm in that day.
Yeah.
Do I want a longer ride or do I want a shorter ride? Is it nighttime? Between one of those two.
For sure.
Yeah.
So now let's just kind of break those two down. So again, on average, you're waiting 90 minutes for Flight of Passage. It's a 5-minute ride time, just to kind of throw that in there, versus Tron, which is a 54-minute average wait time with a 1-minute ride time.
Yeah.
So you're waiting 54 minutes. This is where, to me, if you're assessing value, you're going to get more value, if you will, more ride time out of Flight of Passage.
But here's
even
the deal.
For that extra half an hour.
I have never waited 89 minutes for Flight of Passage. I want to know who's, because 89 is the average.
Yeah.
My average is probably more closer to 100 to 110 minutes.
Yeah.
So who is waiting for 50 to 60 minutes to get that average of 89? I want to meet that person and go to Disney with them.
Right.
So, but I think, so comparing those two attractions, you're talking about 89, 90 minutes for Flight of Passage to 55 for Tron. That's a 35-minute difference. Boy, it's tempting to do Tron.
Really?
I would say so. I would say probably at 55 minutes, I would do Tron.
Wow.
Yeah. And maybe I'm being a little partial there or a little biased because, again, I've never waited 90 minutes for Flight of Passage without a Lightning Lane. So I guess I don't trust that number. But, if it's
a guaranteed lock, you will not wait longer than 90 minutes or 54 minutes for Tron.
Well, let me change my answer. I'll choose Flight of Passage.
Yeah, I would too. That's where I was going is I would still wait an hour and a half. But what's interesting is I'm with you. An hour and a half is my cutoff line for any ride. If I walk up to a queue and I see that the wait time for whatever Remy's Ratatouille is 120 minutes, I'm not riding it.
Yeah.
Like I'm just going to wait and either miss it or come back at another time or figure out how bad I really want to, you know, get on that ride. But for me, hour and a half is my top. I think I get more out of Flight of Passage than I do Tron. It's not anything taken off of Tron. It's just that I love Flight of Passage enough to wait for it more than I would Tron.
No, I agree. I think that's the right call.
Okay. So let's keep moving on then. So we got, we should have done this the opposite way. We should have started at the bottom. Let's go to our next tier. So this is probably our mid-level tier. So again, we have Rise, Slinky Dog, Seven Dwarfs, Test Track, Remy's, Frozen, Peter Pan, and Rock and Roller Coaster. Those are our remaining eight. So for me, the next grouping would probably be of just rides I love, Remy's, Seven Dwarfs, Rise for sure, and I might slide Rock and Roller Coaster in there somewhere.
Okay, so I think for my next tier, I think I'm going to go with Slinky Dog, Test Track. Rock and Roller Coaster, I have fallen out of favor with that.
Whoa.
Because of the shoulder restraint.
Okay.
Gives me nightmares. Seven Dwarves. Yeah, give me Seven Dwarves. Rise. That's probably my next grouping there.
Okay, so you got Rise, Seven Dwarves, Test Track, and who is your fourth or fifth? Remy's?
Slinky Dog.
Slinky Dog. Yeah. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
All right, so of those, just let's kind of go through the same thought process. Of those, which do you like the most?
So if I'm basing this off of Standby, so Test Track's at 56 minutes. Comparing that to Slinky Dog at 74, Seven Dwarves at 73. I'm probably taking Test Track on that one.
Really?
Yeah. I like, again, now if I'm doing Test Track, I probably would do the single rider.
Oh, for
and
sure.
Cut that down to about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But if I'm having to wait, if I'm with the party, with my family, and we're looking at wait times, yeah, 56 minutes compared to 74 or 73, I probably get equal value in terms of enjoyment out of this next tier. I would even say so there's something about Test Track that it does offer that thrill that these other attractions I probably don't get. Slinky Dog is a great roller coaster. Seven Dwarves is a great roller coaster. The thrill, though, comes when Test Track gets to the outside and the metal hits the pedal, or the pedal hits the metal.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's 65.8, whatever it is. That's a great attraction. So yeah, give me Test Track at number one in that grouping. Slinky Dog, Seven Dwarves probably tie, and then
no Rise.
Man, not a 79 minutes.
Okay.
I don't know. Again, this goes back to doing an attraction so many times over the past 6 to 7 years that I think with Rise, there's that surprise element is gone now.
Okay.
Which we've talked about this before. When we first did that attraction, minds were blown. Jaws were open and dropped. Like nothing compared to that feeling. But now that we've done it, I don't know, a dozen to 15 times since
sure.
it first opened, you know, kind of the, it's lost its luster a little bit in terms of the surprise and thrill factor. I still like it. I'm not waiting 79 minutes for it.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think I'm with you on that. I still absolutely love Rise. I still get the thrill factor and the, you know, jaw drop and all that stuff. When I'm on the ride itself and everything is working the way that it's supposed to, I love it. And it's, you know, again, as far as value for time, it's an 18-minute average ride time on Rise of the Resistance, so I love that about it. But I'm with you. That 79, 80-minute wait is what's killer for me, so I would probably push it down a little bit lower. I don't know that I would put it below Slinky Dog just on my personal list just because I hate that queue in Slinky Dog.
That's a crap queue.
It's a brutal, brutal queue, and so that's the only reason why I might rank it above. But we'll go with yours. So then that leaves our last group. So we have 1 through 6 now, so let's get 7, 8, 9, and 10. So that leaves us with Remy's, Frozen Ever After, Peter Pan's Flight, and Rock and Roller Coaster. So of those remaining items, where would you place those?
Well, so looking at these, like the standby time is, they're roughly about the same.
Yeah, this is a even Steven type.
Yeah. So at this point, I'm looking at which is my favorite of this grouping, right? So I probably would choose, I probably would go Frozen, Remy's, Rock and Roller Coaster, Peter Pan's Flight. That's probably what I would do between those four.
All right.
But what would you do?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm a little surprised that you would do Frozen. I didn't think you were that big of a fan of it.
I would go Frozen over Peter Pan all day.
Absolutely, yeah. I would as well.
Yeah.
To me, Peter Pan is a nostalgic ride, but that's about it. And if you don't have a deep connection with Peter Pan, then it's even less than that. So I think that's in the right spot as far as the wait time. If I could actually push it down and pull up maybe some of these others that are listed at 13, 14, 15 as far as wait time.
For sure.
Still,
I mean, Tower of Terror, Space Mountain, Toy Story Mania, bring those up.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
those
absolutely.
Those are in their 40s. But dude, you know what's funny about Peter Pan? Just when you were talking just now, you know, if that ride were 2 minutes longer, like if it were a 3 minute ride flying over London in the pirate ship.
Yeah.
That would be a game changer to me. Because you mentioned nostalgia. I have, like, I remember Peter Pan as one of the earliest animated classics for me. Like, when that came out, obviously I wasn't even born when it came out, but growing up as a kid, that was one of the kind of my first kind of an introduction to Disney, right? Peter Pan, Alice in Wonderland, some of those animated classics from way back when. I love the soundtrack from Peter Pan. If that ride were 2 minutes, if it were 3 minutes, I think for a lot of people, this ride would be higher on this list.
No, for sure. And I wish they would take some of the technology they used for the queue and bring it into the actual ride.
Oh, the queue is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm with you there. But I agree. I think Frozen Ever After would be my, in this next grouping that we talked about, Frozen, Remy's, definitely Rock and Roller Coaster after that. And then finishing up the top 10 highest wait times with Peter Pan being my last option of the two. So let's just kind of run through the list 1 to 10. So Flight of Passage still stays at number one for us. It's an 89 average wait time, 89 minutes. Number two came in at Tron, which is an average of 54 minutes waiting. Number three for us was Test Track, waiting an average of 56 minutes, followed by Slinky Dog, average of 74 minutes. Wow, that would be tough for me.
How did that come in at number four for us?
We were all kind of in that same boat. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Slinky Dog, and then Seven Dwarves after that at number five for a 73 average wait time, 73 minutes. Number six was Rise of the Resistance at 79 minutes. Number seven, Frozen Ever After. Number eight, Remy's Ratatouille. Number nine, Rock and Roller Coaster coming in at 54 minutes. And rounding out our top 10 longest wait time is Peter Pan's Flight at 55 minutes on average.
Okay. That's a solid list. You know, again, not factoring in Lightning Lanes or anything else or single rider lines, you know, having to choose between, you know, based on strictly what the posted wait time and then making the decision there. Yeah, it's not a bad list.
Yeah. And I think the way to approach this is like, hey, you're standing in the middle of Magic Kingdom and you got a wait time of, you know, 73 minutes at Seven Dwarfs or, you know, 55 minutes at Peter Pan. Where are you going? Well, sounds like we're going to Seven Dwarfs Mine Train because we're not going to, you know, choose Peter Pan over Seven Dwarfs, even though we're waiting longer in Seven Dwarfs Mine Train.
Dude, I think this list is actually fascinating because for me personally, a lot of the attractions that I would probably prefer are down the list.
Absolutely. Man,
Tower of Terror at 51 minutes, Space Mountain at 47, Toy Story Mania at 46, Kilimanjaro Safari at 39, Haunted Mansion at 35, Soarin' at 35, Everest at 20. When has Everest ever been a 27-minute average wait?
I'm just telling you, this is what the... Now, here's the fascinating thing to me. You said you're a stat guy. So you take the top 20 longest wait times at all four parks at Disney World. The total is 1,140 minutes of waiting in line. That's your average wait time if you were to hit all, what do I got, 22 top rides here. Here's the, like, mind-blowing thing. You go over to the next column that I created, which is the average wait time of your Lightning Lane, the average wait time combined for all 22 rides, 297 minutes versus 1,100 minutes.
So I think I know where you're going next with this.
So your average time savings. Yeah, you're about to read my mind. Your average time savings for getting Lightning Lane is 843 minutes. Think about that the next time you're debating whether you pay $30 a person to do a Lightning Lane or not. This is not a paid promotion of the Disney Lightning Lane program, but I'm just saying this begins to show you the value that you get.
And you're not going to... Typically, you won't get all of these on a trip.
Right.
It's hard. You know, we've talked about a little bit about this is that if you, let's say you're at Magic Kingdom one day, you purchase the Lightning Lane Pass. You know, on a good day, you may get 6 to 7, maybe 8 of these. Yeah. On a busy day, you may get 3 to 4.
Right.
We've never not gotten 3 to 4.
Yeah, I think on average, and I think Disney has come out and said, hey, look, you should expect to get 3 to 4 lightning lanes per day, right? So if you're getting 6, 7, 8, you're having a great day, in my opinion, because you've doubled what the expectation is for Disney. So, I think if you can get 8 of these, you're saving quite a bit of time per day as well. But this does. So you read my mind. We're leading into just this week, Disney came out with the new Lightning Lane Premier Pass. This is a this is a new program that they've come out with. If you have not seen this yet, of course, this will be a week later. You have not been on any Disney social media sites or Disney Instagrammers. People are losing their minds over this Premier Pass. So let's just give an overview of what it is, first of all. The Lightning Lane Premier Pass is a per-day pass at each park, Disneyland and Disney World. You're paying per park at Disney World. So let's just stick to Disney World for now. The average cost per person, per park, per day is anywhere between $130 and $400 per person per day.
It's okay.
So
it's almost comical. It's almost comical.
It
but
really is.
I think let's get into this because we definitely have some opinions about
this. So this is exactly what they do in Disneyland Paris. So what was it, a year ago? It was a year ago, actually. We were going to Disneyland Paris. They have this Premier Pass. It is literally the exact same thing that Disney just dropped for the U.S. parks. It allows you to ride lightning lanes for each attraction one time. So you get a one-time lightning lane attraction. You don't have to register. You don't have to bounce around the parks. You literally can walk up to any lightning lane for that attraction and walk into it, scan in your phone, you get on the ride, and then you're on to the next ride as a lightning lane. Same about price in Paris as well, about $400. We considered it because we knew we were in France not to go to Disneyland Paris. That was a very, very good byproduct of going to France. But we knew we would only be at Disneyland Paris for a day or two. And so we considered, wow, do we want to blow it out and make sure we get to experience everything we can at Disneyland Paris? We opted not to do that because for our family of 5 at $400 a pop, that was $2,000.
That's a whole other vacation waiting for you.
Yeah, and that's the conclusion that we came to is no matter what, we're just going to have to live with the fact that we're not going to be able to do everything, and we would rather spend that money. If we're going to blow $2,000, we're going to blow it somewhere else in France or souvenirs or whatever than spend $2,000 just to get to ride every single ride. And so what we did was we sat down as a family and we said, okay, here's the rides that Paris offers. Pick your top 3 rides. These are your must-dos, and give me 2 want-to-dos. And that's how we attacked Disneyland Paris. And you know what? It worked out. We did everything we wanted to do and more.
Yeah.
So for us, the Premier Pass was not worth it, at least in Disneyland Paris. Let's talk about Disneyland, Disney World, USA.
And this is also, again, very similar to what Universal offers, which is Universal has their own, Max Pass? Something like that.
Yeah.
Where basically, and I think they have a couple different tiers. They have a tier that...
Express Pass.
Where's Max Pass? Is that Disneyland's old?
Yeah, Max Pass is the old Disneyland.
You see
system.
How confusing? I mean, we're all confused right now. So they have their Express Pass, and they have a couple different levels. One is you buy it, and you can go on every ride as many times as you want. Again,
yes.
When we used to have Universal passes, this is also not a cheap option. This was at times, doubling or even tripling the cost of one day admission.
Yes.
Then they also have a pass where it's like you just get one time.
Right.
So, again, it's like, are you willing to spend that much money to do as many rides as you can in a day?
For me, it's a no.
It's a no.
I just, again, I cannot justify the cost to the experience. Now, granted, I've been to Disney World and Disneyland several times. Very grateful and very blessed that we've been able to do that. I'm very happy that we've been able to do that. But even if I was a first-time goer, and that's why I brought up the Disneyland Paris experience, I just can't see a family justifying this cost unless you know for a fact we're a family that vacations, and this year we're going to Disney World, and we're never coming back again, and we want to make sure in the 4 days that we're there, we get to do everything we want to do. That's the only reason why I can see that this is a justifiable expense.
Yeah. And if we look at this, if we kind of remove ourselves from the hysteria that is currently going on in, you know, in the Disney World community, right? Let's look at really who this is going to affect. Okay. Number one, this is going to be an uber luxurious add-on. Only applies if, so for example, at Disney World, this is only going to be available to people who stay at deluxe resorts. So the highest price tiered resorts on property, you will be the only ones able to purchase this option, right? So right off the bat, if you're staying off property, if you are staying at a deluxe or moderate resort, you don't even worry about it. Like right. This does not even apply to you. Number two,
You said deluxe or moderate.
Sorry.
You meant moderate.
Moderate
or
and value.
Value.
So yeah, moderate and value. You won't have the option to even purchase it, all right? Number two, it's not like they're going to sell 5,000 of these a day, right? My guess is you're looking at maybe 1,000 to 2,000 of these passes every day. They're not going to sell a ton of them. Like, you're not going to be waiting in line and have a whole separate line of these Lightning Lane Premier Pass people just show up, right?
Correct.
My guess is on an average day at Magic Kingdom, you may have 30 to 35,000 people. If they sell 1,000 or even 2,000 of these passes, that's what? 2 to 4%, 2 to 5% of the total number of people there that are going to have these passes. People that would have purchased Lightning Lanes anyway, like, you're not going to notice them just like cutting in front of you. Like,
right.
And the difference between what Disney is doing and what Universal does, Universal, you get shuttled to the front of the line.
Right.
Disney, no. You're going to spend $400. And again, going back to that pricing point, the $129 is going to be for Animal Kingdom.
Sure.
Yeah. The $400 is going to be for
on a slow day.
On a slow day.
Yeah.
The $400 is going to be for Magic Kingdom.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the key, is you got to understand that when I say it's $129 to $400, which is a huge swath of difference, right? Like a huge gap. The $129 is on your slowest day, Animal Kingdom. You know, and it's going to go up to, I believe, $299 or $239 or somewhere. So there's a $100 spread at Animal Kingdom. And then it tiers up to what we believe will be Magic Kingdom, which obviously the $400 day is going to be like your Christmas Eve, Christmas Day type of crowd levels where it's crazy busy. They're going to charge the maximum that they can charge.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, that's a thought also. Like if it was Thanksgiving Day or Christmas Day or one of these, you know, January 1st, New Year's Day type of, and you had the money to spend it, that might be a reason to use this Premier Pass in my mind.
Yeah. And
if I know, hey, we're at Disney, which I'm not crazy enough to do this, but hey, we're going to Disney on Christmas Day because I want to experience being at Disney on Christmas Day. I know it's going to be crazy. I'm getting the Premier Pass so that I can get on whatever rides I want. But again, your point is valid. Like, I'm not being shuttled to the front of the line. I'm being put in a Lightning Lane. And listen, I've been in Lightning Lanes that are still 30-minute waits, 40-minute waits, right? Because there's just so many people in the Lightning Lane at that particular time that it's just jammed up. Maybe the ride was broken, and so now all the Lightning Laners come back, and the Lightning Lane is full of people. And you're not saving any more time. I mean, I guess you are, because they're going to shuttle the lightning lane people through first before the standby queue. But other than that, yeah, I mean, I don't know that you're getting any advantage other than you don't have to book your lightning lanes for this premier pass. That's the only advantage that I can see over just getting the regular $30 lightning lane pass and trying to book as many as you possibly can.
So this is genius on Disney's part. I think they have flipped the script. They're messing with our psyche at this point because like they come out with this new thing. It's like, yeah, it's $400, you know, $300 to $400 at Disney World and what? $400? No.
Yeah, it's $400 at Disneyland,
right? So it's like, oh, all of a sudden the $32 that you're going to spend for the daily lightning lane pass.
Not so bad.
Not so bad anymore. Like, not so bad. But here's what's crazy too about this is like Disney does not do anything without a ton of research. Everything is calculated, which is why they have people, cast members standing in the parks with their little iPads. They're talking to people every day. How many times have you been to the parks, gotten home, received an email with the survey?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
As people that go often like we do, sometimes just randomly I'll get an email. Hey, do you have 10 minutes for a survey? Sometimes I'm on the website. Hey, do you have 2 minutes for a survey? Like they have researched this and come to the conclusion that this is a good option to offer this Lightning Lane Premier Pass at this price point.
Well, and I saw another YouTuber that was talking about it over in Paris. And so I gravitated to it because that was a consideration that we took in. And he brought up a very good point. Paris tends to be kind of a testing ground for Disney trying new programs or whatever you want to call them, right? So this Premier Pass, again, has been going over at Paris for a couple of years now. At first, it did not take off. In fact, it really... like almost choked itself out because it was such a expensive add-on. But the way this YouTuber was describing it is now it's kind of caught on and more and more people are using it. The other thing that you and I talked about in the pre-show is, you know, this might be a poor man's VIP tour. And what I mean by that is if I don't need the plaid vest VIP tour guide to take me around and show me different and walk me through the park, which I wouldn't, right? But I want to like have a, you know, blow it out expensive day and get every ride in that I want and just have as much extra time as I want. Then yeah, I mean, those tours are $7,000 to $10,000. So if I can, and you can get up to, I think what, 12 people or something like that. So,
well, and I think the minimum is 10 people. And yeah. I think they do have cheaper versions of the tour.
They might.
Yeah, where you don't.
I guess I should have researched that before I brought it up.
No, I think you're fine. I think there are cheaper versions of the tour.
Let's just call it 7,000 for 10 people. So that's $700 a person versus $400 a person. Yeah, I might do that. I might say, hey, me and my family are going to go do this self-guided tour essentially and pay $400 a person and get in and go that route. And so anyway, obviously there's other benefits that come with the VIP tour. You get a private shuttle that will, you know, whisk you from park to park. And so there's other benefits to having a VIP tour, but this might be an alternative to spending that much money on a it's kind of like the middle ground, right? I'm not Lightning Lane, but I'm not VIP, and so if I find a middle ground of $400 a person, it might be worth it for me.
Yeah, and you weren't too far off. So the VIP tours range from $450 to $900 per hour with a minimum of 7 hours and a maximum of 10 hours. So a maximum VIP tour at the top price range would be $9,000.
It's incredible.
Yeah. So
those are different people living in a different world than what I live in, man.
Yeah, and this is what they're doing. They are catering to a certain group of people, not us. There is no way I would ever buy, you know, I mean, this is pocket change to some people.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Celebrities.
We're not in that category, which is fine. Most people are not in this category. So again, I think going back to my original thought of, I think people are getting really upset at this. Oh, Disney is pricing the middle class out. Disney is getting too expensive. You know, shame on you, Disney. I'm like, no, let's remember that Disney still is a business. They answer to shareholders, right? You have to make money to keep shareholders happy, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So Disney's trying to make money. This is another add-on service that 99% of people will never take advantage of because we don't want to. We don't want to spend that kind of money. We can't afford it. Whatever reason it is, personally, I'm with you. $2,000 a day, that's a vacation somewhere else. For most of us, this is not even an issue. We're not even going to notice it in the parks. We're not even going to notice it in the lines. This is going to be something that is just, it's for a select group of people, people that stay at the Poly, at the Grand Flow, at the Contemporary.
Yes.
That's it. That's it. It's not going to be that big of a deal.
No, I totally agree. And maybe just to kind of wrap this up and then we can do a magical scenario because we haven't done one of those in like 8 episodes or something
like that.
People
say that's their favorite part of the podcast. So
I agree with you. I think the impact to you and I as a everyday Disney consumer, right? So an everyday park consumer. And what I mean by that is obviously we're not going to the parks every day, but just that we're the average Disney consumer that's going to the parks. And the impact to us is going to be little to none. Even that, we're not even the average Disney park goers, right? We're probably even a little bit above average, if we are going multiple times, right?
I would say if you're going multiple times a year, you're above average.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think your impact is minimal. I think you're right. I think we need to view this is an added benefit to a certain class of people or group of people that can afford this, that want to afford this. Just as you look at people that are going to a football game and some people are sitting in a suite and some people are sitting in the stands. The people that are sitting in the suites has no impact on the people that are sitting in the stands, right? You're still seeing the same football game. You're still getting the same experience. It's just one has paid for a little bit extra perks and add-ons that the other has not. And that's fine. It still doesn't impact me as the person that's there to watch a ball game, right? So that's kind of how I view it. I don't think it's going to impact us at all.
I already said it. I agree. Disney, do what you got to do. You've got to make more money. You know, I get it. We get it, right? But don't raise prices on the food.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, keep our Mickey pretzels under $10.
I think just again, and I'll finish here so that we don't keep beating this to death. I think where it becomes a problem for a lot of people is it just appears to be just one more thing that Disney's doing to raise prices somewhere, right? And so when you see other prices in other areas like food, like ticket prices, like merchandise being, you know, ticking up, and then you see these outrageous Premier Pass tickets being sold, you're like, oh my gosh, Disney, enough is enough, right? So I get that this is getting lumped in to it, but, you know, the phrase, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, that's what I think is happening here, is people are freaking out, and this doesn't impact you.
Yeah.
This only impacts the person who wants to pay for this extra special pass.
People freaking out on social media? That's odd.
It's weird, but it happens.
Yeah.
All right. So here's a thought I had on, and I don't know if we've done this or not. If we have, I apologize, but magical scenario. Aerosmith, their contract is coming up. I can't remember the exact date that it ends, but Rock and Roller Coaster could potentially be Aerosmithless, if that's
deck making up words.
If that's a word. So if you could retheme Aerosmith, don't retheme Aerosmith. They are perfect the way they are. Love Aerosmith. But if you could retheme Rock and Roller Coaster, doesn't have to be a music band. It could be something totally different. Any other type of theme that you want to go with, how would you retheme Rock and Roller Coaster into a new ride experience?
Well, I think because of the nature of the coaster, you have to have some sort of fast, energetic music. So I think for me, you could keep the Rock and Roller Coaster theme. Man, I I feel like we've talked about this. Maybe we haven't. But
maybe we.
But
yeah.
But I think last time I said U2. But let me tell you, I think Cosmic Rewind has opened up a lot of options for music.
Oh, for sure.
Right? So you start looking at bands like, again, this is, I don't know if this is going to date me, but like Def Leppard.
Okay.
Right? Maybe Led Zeppelin a little bit. Even like, I don't know, like some Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I mean, I'm a fan. I don't listen to that music now, but, you know, getting some Def Leppard on Rock and Roller Coaster might be kind of fun.
There you go.
Just saying. What about you?
So I was going a totally different direction. I was going with the thought process of some type of Marvel's ride. So whether it's a Iron Man ride or some type of maybe, what's her name?
Captain Marvel?
Captain Marvel type of ride. Yeah, where you're, like, I'm talking a total revamp of the ride and the vehicles and all of that. Obviously, the track and all that would stay the same, but you'd rebuild a totally different storyline all around going on an adventure, maybe fighting in New York with Tony Stark and, you know, battling the aliens that are coming down during the first battle of the Avengers movie. I can't remember what those aliens are called, but just some sort of movie-themed type of ride centered around the Marvel universe and getting that in there. I know that's typically over in the Hollywood area, but not Hollywood.
Disneyland, California Adventure, yeah.
But I think you could do that. That would be fun to have some sort of like Iron Man ride, which, again, I'm cheating. They have a similar type of ride over in Disneyland Paris. It was awesome. It's got two loops in it instead of just the one.
Well, Disneyland is getting an Iron Man ride.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, just announced.
There you go. So that's how I would do it.
Okay. I can see that. You know, I mean, we got two different options here.
Yeah.
Keeping the rock music.
Yes.
Theming, or just going a different direction and retheming the entire thing with a new, you know, IP.
Absolutely. Yeah,
I think either one would be fun.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Yeah, they just got to fix the shoulder restraints. I don't think that ride is built for people that are over 6 feet.
No.
At all. And we are both, I'm 6'3". What are you? 6'2"?
Maybe 6'2". Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. And if you're, I mean, you got some beef on you in a good way. So, like, that's not a very comfortable ride for us.
You know what would be another one is kind of like Incredicoaster. Just some type of theming like that. I'm not saying a second Incredicoaster, but just taking something from Pixar or from, that's where I was going, is like some sort of IP of Disney's that you could easily incorporate into a, you know, roller coaster ride of some kind.
No, I see it. I can see it.
Yeah. Anyways. All right. Interesting show. Maybe a little bit hard to follow with our rankings and where they started and where they ended up. Really good discussion, I thought, about the Premiere Pass and kind of timely based on it just coming out. But
You know what? One last thought about the Premiere Pass. And I meant to say this. Like, for example, if you buy the Premiere Pass at Magic Kingdom. So I think this is another thing that I'm like, I just can't see myself ever doing this. Let's say you pay the $400. And what does Magic Kingdom have? 18 attractions?
Yeah.
So that's basically about $20 per attraction. If I'm walking around, I just paid $20 for the freaking Astro Orbiter. I can't do it.
Well, so I know we were going to wrap up the show, but here's the other thing. At Disneyland, you don't even get the premier rides. You don't get...
Yeah, that's right. You still have to pay...
You don't get...
Separately for cars.
Radiator Springs Racers. Yeah. So I'll be curious to see how that works. Like, does that get you on to Guardians? Does it get you on to, you know, some of these that you have to buy the individual Lightning Lane on? My guess is going to be no for Disney World as well. I don't know for sure. Someone can fact check us, but like that, it still doesn't get you any into some of these premier rides that you want to get on. It doesn't eliminate the need for you to buy the individual Lightning Lane.
And imagine for example, you're at Animal Kingdom. Let's say you pay the $130 and Everest is down.
Yeah.
Or you just do single rider and you get on in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Like it just, again, not our cup of tea. We've explained it.
Right.
We're done.
Yeah. For sure. All right. Give us a like and a follow on all of our social media accounts. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your thoughts and opinions on this premiere pass. And give us a comment, a review. We'd love to hear from you.
Thanks, guys.